There's people who have bring the call meeting to order. There's people who have checked in and of course before we do actually have a quorum
and we can get them.
I'm going to do something which I know is slightly rude and I usually don't do because I just don't do it. But the reason I'm doing it is because it's we do have someone here who needs to get out to do other things. So I'm moving House File 3453. Also, I don't think it's going to take very long. 3453, which is my bill on the Starbase Program Effectiveness Study provisions modified. So I'm moving that bill up to the front. So Kim Van Way, who is the executive director, can testify and go back to doing good stuff. So, Van Way. And I'll just stay here. As if we run into any problems, I'll get the chair down. But I think this is okay. And let me first of all, I guess I'll move passage of the bill. Then it goes then on to the full finance committee. We may House File 3453. We may also put this in an omnibus bill once we find out what the conditions of omnibus bill is. And this has this is money that we already appropriated last year for needs. Drag to be here and he's not here because I met him in the halls with Representative Spigum the other day, and Spigum told me he's supposedly committed to doing all of the Spigum program. And this was something that after hearing this program, Representative Spigum, and hearing of the difficulties in getting this longitudinal study funded, said that we could clearly do it. This was, this was nothing compared to the things that we spend money on. The appropriation was for $25,000. Problems was, and I guess I have to take the blame for this, I always think I should know everything there is to know about state finance, but the whole discussion had always been that this was a single source because the St. Paul schools were clients and they were already working with Wilder and everyone knew about it. When it got to the legal people who decide these things, they said this grant couldn't be let until it went out on a nationwide bidding process. So we're now here to put the language you should have put in last year to make it a single source. And Kim, you want to say a few words about the Starbase program and why this program will be good for us and so forth?
Yep, Madam Chair and committee members, so Starbase Minnesota is a nonprofit educational organization. We serve over 2,700...
Kim, I'm sorry. You need to introduce yourself to the tape before you start.
I'm Kim Van Wee, and I'm the Executive Director of Starbase Minnesota. And Starbase is a nonprofit educational organization that serves primarily inner-city children, Minneapolis and St. Paul, primarily over 2,700 students a year. And our focus is science, math, technology, and engineering education for kids, trying to inspire kids around science and math, and so they can be more successful in school and be employable, productive citizens. For a long time, we've wanted to know about the long-term impact of the program. We have a lot of information about with short-term indicators, measuring, because we give them pre- and post-tests, we have a lot of information about the effectiveness of their knowledge, skills, and interest increase based on our program. We have some information about what happens 3 to 5 months after Starbase when they go back to the schools, and we went in and post-tested those students again, and they're not only retaining knowledge, but they're increasing it after the program. So the question became, what do we know about the long-term impact of the program? And that is where we brought in Wilder Foundation because of their excellent reputation, their access, and their work that they've done with St. Paul Schools, which allows for this study to be completed more readily and easily. St. Paul Schools trust them enough to allow them access to the student data, making this study affordable at $25,000. Otherwise, it would cost much more. The benefit of Wilder, we had gone down the road with them because they were very interested in the educational model that works. They feel that they can use the information from the study to inform other educational programs and even schools in the state of Minnesota. Therefore, outsourcing or trying to go through a competitive bid process and potentially having to bring in somebody that's not even in the state, I don't think it's going to achieve our goals for the study and for what we hope the ramifications are for the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Any questions? Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks very much. And I guess I'll move that the bill be, renew my motion that the bill be passed on to the full finance committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Jim. Okay. And Representative Tilbury was hanging out.
Yeah, he's back there.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3417 to the full Finance Committee.
Thank you. This particular bill is a small bill, and sometimes I think it's the least we can do. It's the kind of bill that that helps out veterans as they are looking at, and here's the word, it says the short description, returning combat veteran reinstatement fee waiver provided. That's what it does, but what does that mean? It means if a veteran was called up and goes over to serve, and they serve, and they had a business at that point, and then they had to give it up because they had gone overseas or wherever to their combat place, they need when they come back and they want to start that business up again, according to our rules, they have to pay a $25 reinstatement fee. This particular bill would say that this would not have to happen. The fiscal note is a pretty hefty one at about $930.
That costs more to get the fiscal note.
So that's why I said it's probably the least we can do.
Okay. As I understand it from the language, this is one of the things that this is really this doesn't go backwards in time. This just goes forward, so it's
correct.
Better people who are in the armed service now. Okay, maybe.
I have Seth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Madam Chair, Beth Frazier from the Secretary of State's office. The language is retroactive to January.
Not very. I just want you to know if it's retroactive to World War II or something.
Okay.
Okay. Any questions about this? Any discussion? Okay. Representative Ward renews his motion that has filed 3417 be recommended to pass and passed on to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Bill passes. Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Fraser?
Yes.
Since you're here too, and we don't see the. Oh, Lauren and Bill Marks are here. Okay. I think we can do this one pretty quickly, too. The Help America Vote Act. Sorry, guys, it's another con bill. 3969. And I'll move that this be recommended to pass and go on to the Finance Committee. And Ms. Fraser, do you want to...
Madam Chair and members, this bill simply allows the Secretary of State and the Department of Finance to transfer the necessary amount of funds from our general fund appropriations into the HAVA account to make sure that we can meet all of the requirements of federal law.
I guess what I'm into, I don't understand why we did things using HAVA over the past couple of years. Why isn't this kind of like general language? Or do we have to do it every time there's more HAVA money that's come in, or what's the reason? I mean, this seems like in accepting HAVA, you know, we've agreed that we're going to do this, and,
right.
You know, I know we don't like to appropriate federal funds in general without seeing it, but this one seems like a funny time to have to be seeing that. So is there any reason why that's true?
Yes, Madam Chair. Every state that is accepting Help America Vote Act funds is audited by the Election Assistance Commission, and we are in the process of just finishing up the audit of the program. As part of the receipt of the funds, we had to provide a 5% state match. And we did that last year in your bill. We earmarked $310,000 of our general fund appropriations and said that was the state match and put it into the HAVA fund. In the audit, the auditor came back with two issues. One is that they believe that the fund should have been fully matched in 2004 when we received them. And so they want us to pay interest that would have been earned on those funds had they been in the HAVA account. The other issue is that we actually owed not $310,000, but $310,619.32. And so we need to transfer the $620 plus the interest on that money plus the interest that would have been earned, which is part of why there's not an exact dollar amount, so that we don't miss it by a few dollars again and have to come back yet again.
Okay, I just wondered if there was some place we should have had this general language earlier. Does this need to be effective immediately? Do we need an immediate effective date on this?
Madam Chair, yes, that would be a good amendment.
Okay, so we then, the we don't need to do a separate session for that then. We just put, okay, so the language is then added, effective date, this section is effective the day following final enactment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just, Ms. Fraser, does any of this allocation include appropriations for kid voting?
No.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, no. The Help America Vote Act funds can be only be used to educate voters, and since the kids are not of voting age, we cannot use any of the funds for kids voting.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess, or I still, somehow, I think the total amount that we're moving is $619.32, is that right? Or
No, Madam Chair, it's that amount plus the interest on that amount plus the interest on the $310,000 that would have been earned over 3 years, so that's about $36,000, I think.
Oh, okay. I feel a little bit better. I felt if we were looking at 619, it was probably costing more than $619 just to process a bill. But I still think somehow is there going to be more HAVA? Will that be continuing? Will we have some in the next biennium too?
Yes, Madam Chair. This past fall, the Congress allocated some additional HAVA funds, and so over the next year or so, we'll need to revise the Help America Vote Act plan and do another state match.
Okay, and then hopefully at that time we'll have the appropriation matching so that
exactly.
Yeah. Okay, any questions?
Madam Chair, I was wondering, don't we have to pass your amendment for the enacted thing?
Oh, yes, you're right. Thank you. Okay, all those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Okay. And now we now go on to the amendment for the bill to go on to the full Finance Committee is in order, so I'll move that up. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Here we go. Okay. Representative Solberg,
3493. Yeah, please. Madam Chair, thank you for summoning. And move 3493, and I think But this one can go directly to the floor.
I think we can only send things
to finance.
We can only send them to finance.
That we didn't interfere far. Madam Chair, someone would be so kind to move that.
Madam Chair, I'll move that.
Okay, Representative Poppy moves House File 3493 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance.
Madam Chair, maybe the best thing to do in this one is to let Mr. David Kerr, or John Kerr from the Department of Public Safety or Homeland Security explain the need for this bill to relate to the flood.
Okay.
He's been managing that special.
Okay. Please give your name for the tape. And
yes, Madam Chair, thank you. My name is John Kerr. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management in the Department of Public Safety. Madam Chair, members, the purpose of this bill is to amend last year's disaster relief legislation by adding some language, that's actually the same language, in two different places in the bill. And the purpose of the amendment is to revise last year's legislation, if you will, so that it is in conformance with the requirements of the FEMA Public Assistance Program. The language that we propose be added is also in conformance with House File 2904, which is Representative Kowalski's Natural Disaster Assistance Bill. By way of very brief explanation, the FEMA Public Assistance Program is primarily the federal program that provides reimbursement for the repair and replacement of damaged public property. And the way the program works, FEMA funds 75% of the eligible costs of that work, and either the applicant, if it's the local government or the state or some combination thereof, has to assume responsibility for the remaining 25%. Normally, the state of Minnesota covers 15% of the 25% non-federal share, but as I think you all are well aware, last year it was decided that the state would assume responsibility for the full 25% non-federal share. As it happens in our state, we disperse the FEMA dollars to the applicants, and we also disperse the state match. So for this particular disaster, between the FEMA dollars that we are awarding to the applicants and the state match dollars that we're awarding, essentially we are giving the applicant 100% of the cost of whatever particular public assistance program project is involved. What happened last year, some of you are, I think, are very well aware that in order to qualify for federal assistance in the first place, every state, with every request, the governor has to indicate in his letter to the president that the disaster is beyond the resources, if you will, of the local governments and the state. And normally our pattern in Minnesota has been that disaster relief bills of the sort that was enacted last year come sometime later down the road, after which point we know what cost FEMA will be assuming responsibility for and what costs it won't be assuming responsibility for. Last year was very different in that the legislation was enacted very early, long before we knew what FEMA was going to be paying for and what it couldn't pay for. Consequently, as soon as FEMA became aware of this legislation and looked at the amount of money that was being appropriated, the bill seemed to suggest the state was intending to fund all the costs up front and then perhaps be expecting FEMA to reimburse the state or the applicants after the fact. That's not permitted by law. And so FEMA was suggesting to us that they might have to think about declaring the state to be ineligible, after all, for the federal assistance. At that point, we started working with them to see, well, what can we do to address this, you know, to your satisfaction, to assure you that a local government that happens to get state money from another agency other than us, that essentially those monies will simply be in advance that will be repaid to the state. There'll be seed money, if you will, to let those governments get started. So there are a lot of governments out there that obviously are very cash-strapped. So that was our explanation. And we did two things. Immediately after the bill was passed, or within 2 days, our director did that. He sent a letter to all of the affected commissioners and explained the problem and, you know, provided some information to avoid any possible duplication of benefits or double payment to local governments for the same eligible work. We also had to make a commitment to FEMA that in the following legislative session we would attempt to amend the bill to make it clear that there would be no duplication of benefits and that the only money the applicants would be receiving for their FEMA eligible work would be the 75% FEMA share and the full 25% match that we would be disbursing to those jurisdictions. So that's the background here to this particular bill.
And Madam Chair, this was identified, as my understanding, after we had passed the bill and before the Senate had taken it up, and the Senate had attempted to put this fix in, but we had already left in the special session. So with that, I think we need to have this fix become a reality. If we don't do it, we do put, I think, the state at risk and the local units of government at risk as well.
Okay. Any questions? Comments? Okay. I'll renew my motion. Poppy renews her motion. Bill passed and be referred to finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passed. Okay. Now, things get more complicated.
Okay. Sir, why don't we take up, I guess, House File 3737. Would you give the time to do that?
Yeah, we have to...
There is an amendment for that.
Okay. The little problem that we have with it is that this is a whole group of bills that are related to kind of doing the same thing. And I'm not quite sure how we're going to handle them, but maybe, I guess the best way is to start talking about them.
Madam Chair, I understand that. There's a couple of them, and the next one is kind of as a result of some conversations as well.
Okay.
If you want to just have a discussion on this today, and
no, let's. I think that we'll have. We'll put the bill. We may end up holding it over instead of passing it. But I think you have an amendment, and we want to do.
I'm sure. I think that we have the amendment offered.
We want to get the bill in also.
Madam Chair, I'll move adoption of the bill.
So Representative Tilsey moves adoption of. House File 3737. Okay, the bill is now before us. And
Master,
the amendment is the A1 amendment.
I would move the A1 amendment also.
Okay, you want to put the A1 amendment on and then you'll explain. Okay.
Madam Chair, let me discuss a little bit.
First. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry, did you adopt the amendment?
No, you want us to adopt the amendment and then discuss it, or do you
want
to discuss it?
Fine,
okay. Representative Hilty moves the A1 amendment also. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed. Okay.
Madam Chair, throughout my legislative career, we've had all kinds of discussions on and relationship, particularly in the budget with the executive branch, and it doesn't matter who the governor is, which party it is, or if there is no party, there's a... I wouldn't say a conflict, but a tension between, and rightly so, I think, between the executive branch and the legislative branch on the budgeting process. This is an attempt to give the legislature an opportunity to have additional information. And let me just talk a little bit about the bill and also the amendment that was drafted as well. And I think what we're trying to do is to get some direct access to programmatic and human resources that are in the executive branch and, quite frankly, the legislative branch, although that information is much easier for us to obtain, to effectively, hopefully, have a good dialogue between the different branches of government on providing a very effective and cost-effective government that meets the demands of its citizens. The amendment on page 2 I think make the technical correction, but the amendment of line 1.3 gives the cash flow a little bit of additional time for them to give us a report on cash flow, 30 days. The line of 1.4 of the amendment gives us a little bit less time for them to submit some of their proposals to us, from 2 weeks to 1 week. In talking with finance, when I first came into the legislature and had an opportunity to be on Representative Kahn's committee, we had a book that had a lot more information than what the ones have now. But the administration at least had some concern that maybe if we go with the language that was drafted, we'd have very large books that we'd probably have more information than what we need. So this is, in a sense, a directive to allow the legislature to get those appropriations that broken down as the legislature deems is appropriate and not have it automatically come in the big book. Page 6 is clarifying, deleting that account. And I think, Madam Chair, there's one additional section that is a little bit suspect in this committee since we have a deadline on the tomorrow. And that is section 4. And with that particular, what we're talking about in section 4 is a change in the data privacy law. And so if we leave that section in, we may have to go to another committee. So I just want to point that out to you as we discuss that. In explaining the bill, I think I'm attempting with this legislation to get an opportunity for us to have as much information as possible. It also does another strengthening of the Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy, and makes some of those requests from them to the state agencies for budget information and recommendations. Representative Kahn and I were around when Representative David Bishop was instrumental in establishing the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy. And one of the directives at the time was to be able to look at long-term planning, long-term budgeting activities. And I think we've kind of forgot one of the purposes of it. And this is giving that commission some additional responsibility as well. The Section 9 of the bill requests some detailed information or timely information on the deficiencies. I don't see that that's a controversial part of the bill. We have taken out here the budget reserve account so that it goes up to 5%. And in the repealers, I want you to understand that there's also under current law, it says if we have any additional money goes into two accounts, the budget reserve account at a certain time, and then also into the tax relief account. And there's nothing wrong with the budget reserve account, but I think that should be a legislative action instead of an automatic one, and the same thing with the tax relief account. We had some money in there once, and the first thing the legislature did is transfer it out of there. And so we're just doing away with those particular accounts in every theater. And I know the administration has some concerns about this particular bill, and would like to support it, I'm sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Brent Gustafson from the Department of Finance, and appreciate the chance to comment on this bill. Had some conversations with Representative Solberg about concerns we have, and I guess I'd classify those concerns as of two natures. One, sort of a philosophical, and secondly, more practical implications of what's expected in this legislation. And the philosophical one is probably not a surprise to anyone. The requirement of the executive branch to disclose all details of option development and provide some of those materials either during or after a budget is developed. I think that the executive branch, whether it's this governor or any governor, wants to have that the ability to have in confidence discussions around options and proposals that are not subject to the same level of public scrutiny as once that individual settles on a final set of recommendations, just as the legislature in its be it committee or caucus level discussions about options and proposals doesn't necessarily want all of that information vetted in public. The ability to explore options and have that information is, I think, viewed as an important element of thoughtful budget development, and that's why I think the would like to continue to have the ability to maintain the confidence of that information. Secondly, practically speaking, principally around, I believe it's Section 5 that requires the Department of Finance to obtain and submit to the legislature information that we don't currently have and practically speaking are unlikely to be able to obtain in any satisfactory manner as it's envisioned in this legislation. And so beyond that, appreciate Representative Silberg's amendment as it addresses a number of the other practical concerns we have with the bill. I think it is more able to be implemented in its amended form on some of the technical aspects of the materials that we provide or be expected to provide in the future. But I did want to convey our concern about this bill and others that essentially expect that all executive branch budget deliberations be open to the public.
Madam Chair, I can understand that the governor's or the executive branch's concern. But let me tell you that I think that open communication is sometimes extremely helpful. This last fall, because of lack of communication, because of lack of legislative knowledge on a particular thing, we have a situation that with the mesothelioma study that was withheld, that the legislature didn't know about. And had the legislature known about that particular problem, I think we would have taken a very proactive stance on trying to solve it. As I sat in on those hearings, communications and the identification of the problem was early on in the Department of Health. But in their deliberations, they chose not to include any of that in the budgeting proposals. I think if some of that information would have been available to the legislature, we would have solved that. One of the communications that I said I thought was the most compelling argument for this was the communication within the Department of Health that kind of said, if I'm paraphrasing now, because they don't have it in front of me, but if I recall right, the paraphrase is that we were applying for federal funds, and if we don't get the federal funds, and the media finds out about this, what will our reaction be? And the second part of that was, and you know how difficult it is, or no, the word I think was how sensitive it is to ask for state money. I think that tells us that we need to have better communication between a lower level within the department, within communications of problem solving within a department and the legislative branch. Now, I open my statement by saying that there's tension between the executive and legislative branch, and that's healthy tension sometimes. But I think also in the opposite of that, it's healthy communications and healthy knowledge never hurt either the executive or the legislative branch. And we make deliberative decisions on the information that's before us. And if we don't have good information before us, we will make bad decisions on legislative policy. So I know that that there's a concern, and I acknowledge that, and I understand the concern of the executive branch on that, but I do think we need to come up with some particular way of having more open communication, more ability of within the executive branch of not just having one or two people talk for an agency, but have a culture in the agency that would feel comfortable in forwarding information to the legislative branch for problems. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I'm bringing this forward. This may not be the best solution, and I said that some of this also, if we open up it, it would have to be go to another committee, and I understand that. But I do think we need to have a strong dialogue with the executive branch and the legislative branch on information. And one of the attempts of this legislation is to strengthen the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy to a stronger role in saying what is the long-term planning and fiscal policy that we should have in the state of Minnesota.
Any questions or comments? One comment I'd like to make, and I don't, I do think that there is a level of privacy of deliberations that the executive branch ought to have, and all I'm doing is just thinking about there was a process over all the years, and I think the person who closed it was perhaps Governor Carlson, so it went through as an open process through Wendell Anderson and Governor Quay and maybe even governors before Wendell Anderson. When the agencies made their presentation to the Department of Finance of what they wanted, the legislative staff attended those. They were open and all our legislative staff attended them. And it was kind of good, but then when we came to our discussion, they kind of knew what some of the thoughts were within the agency on that. And I don't think in all those years that there was any, violation, that there was any problem with secrecy, and I don't think that there was any, disruptive influences or anything that happened. And I don't, it seems to me at a certain level, and then we always saw what we had was when we got our budget book, what we had was what the agency requested, and we get some of this. We sometimes had what the division requested to the agencies, maybe. Division to the agency, what finance had cut down, and then what the governor. Yeah, so we had three levels at least. The agencies request the finances. Analysis of that and then finance's statement to the governor and then the governor's appropriation. We also had about 2 years budget history beyond that. I think we now get no budget history in our books. So we really could see what the increases were and we could see what was, when an increase, at least within two bienniums, I think, at least when an increase in the base set. And I just, Representative Solberg, I don't know what, I don't know if this bill goes too far or what, but I don't know if there's some place where we can say we want more conversations, but we do understand that there's a certain level of decision, that ought to be the governor's final budget, ought to be the governor's final budget. And I think we don't want the information that's going to go into how he sets that, but we kind of want the stuff that's and before that. And I don't know how you draw the line,
properly. Well, Madam Chair, I think you've identified the question or the problem. I think in the long run, open communications is healthy. And sometimes I think within an agency, there's probably somebody down lower on the agency that has a good idea, and it may cost some money, and we're not going to do that. They don't dare to ask for it, or we'll get shot down. And so we do need to have, I think, as much communications as possible. The next bill that's before us is an attempt to at least have some kind of additional conversations with the agency on request-wise. So, and that's the next bill is one that has been kind of thought through by Bill Marks, and We might want to have some conversation on that as well.
Representative Silver, does this bill complete, do those two bills at least match completely?
Well, they probably could. I think.
Not to mention the Whatman bill.
Madam Chair, I think in looking, we knew that the first bill that we're talking about right now has some concerns with the department. But I know Mr. Marks has had some conversations with, and always has conversations with communications with the Department of Finance, with Mr. Gustafson and others in there, and they said, well, if this is what the legislature wants, then when you ask for it, you should be able to get it, type thing. And I think that's kind of the emphasis of the next bill as we go through. Madam Chair, I guess it's up to you and the committee what you want to do with the first bill. Whether you want to remove the section so it doesn't have to go any other place other than moving it forward, if you want to hang on to it.
Why do I never think that state budget data is really the purview of that privacy, state of privacy subcommittee somehow?
I would agree.
They had better things to do.
And one of the things I served at the judiciary, what they call judiciary one time, and had two divisions, criminal and data privacy, and I avoided data privacy like that. So,
So what's your suggestion is that, particularly if it's interrupted against deadlines,
well, Madam Chair, I think
the section never got passed, what would?
Well, then I think we can move the bill forward anyway. If we eliminate, I think it's section
four.
But that also has, I think, a big impact on the impetus of the bill. So, and I don't, and I say this because I don't know what the status is up in the Senate. Because it's down to those committees in the Senate.
So, if we wanted, this bill isn't, well, unless this bill is passed in the Senate, we're not going to meet the policy deadline then.
And I'm sorry, I don't know that for sure.
Well, what I would like to do is I think delete this section and then deal with later if there's some reason why things don't work without that section.
Sure.
And I'd actually like to hear the next bill and the Whatman bill. And my preference, my preference would be to send one bill out on budget structure and policy. And I don't know if you and Mr. Marks and Representative Whatman can get to one bill on that and get strong nods from Representative Whatman. And I think, and at that point, it's a finance bill, so we don't have to meet. We don't have to meet policy deadlines, and I'd be more comfortable if this committee, be most comfortable if this committee could send out a bill that the Department of Finance was happy with, too. if that's impossible, we'll.
Well, Madam Chair, to follow your guidance, and by deleting Section 4, I think we accomplished what you want to do.
Okay.
With the respect of the other jurisdictions.
Okay. I'll move that we delete Section 4. Any discussion about that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Oh, first and second.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Fulberg. I think Representative Kahn did a good job of laying out some of the concerns I think a lot of us might have. And I'm relatively new. I know you've been here, both of you have been here a lot longer than I have. And I guess this comes as somewhat of a surprise to me because whenever I've asked for any particular information, it seems like it's been pretty readily available. And I guess this is maybe a question to our fiscal staff. Have you had problems getting direct access from agencies? Or I guess I'm trying to kind of figure out what problem it is that we're kind of trying to fix here. You did give one example, Representative Goldberg, but
But just generally, I'm trying to, I guess, get a handle on how rampant this problem of not having access is, because it just, that has not really been my experience. And then I do have a specific question for Representative Solberg, too, and that is on page 4, line 8, you wanted to have a copy of the agency responses to that request to the chair of the Senate Finance Committee and the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, and I'm wondering why we would limit it to those two folks, because, as you know, that would completely eliminate one party. And so I'm trying to figure out why we wouldn't have it delivered to the minority and the majority leader, or something that was more evenly balanced. But I guess if I could get my first question answered from perhaps Ms. Roberts or...
Madam Chair, Representative Pepin, I guess I'm not sure if I can answer that, because I'm not sure what the problem is either in terms of... we've definitely had examples in this committee where the committee has asked for the agency's proposal on a budget, and the agency has basically answered it's the governor's initiative, and that was the data that we were going to get. But I would note on as far as the detailed budget goes, but fiscal staff does have access to quite a bit of information beyond what's in the budget book, and Department of Finance has always made that available to us. And in terms of specific spending in agency, we've never had problems getting answers to specific data requests. But I that's a general answer. I'm not sure what if there's another specific problem that members might have.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, let me try to take a stab at the second part of your question. I think that's almost standard just type of language. If you wanted others to have information, I have no objection to that either. I think the information is shared is good information. I think that's just kind of a standard procedure. And, much of that time is posted on the web anyway. So.
Yeah.
Madam Chair?
So I guess the amendment that we put in there, does the Senate have ranking members, or they have leads, or what do they have? Do they have leads?
I'm not sure if they do or not. I can't say.
Madam Chair, and as a lower ranking member of the majority party, I would like to see that stuff too. So I don't know. I know that there are a lot of members who don't want that paper, but the problem is there are a lot of members who do. And so, you know, I understand what Representative Pepin's getting at. I guess I would take it one step further. I'd like to see all members of the legislature get it.
And, you know, I think the problem there is that we need to have better procedures from the top down, I don't know, from finance or from the chairs or whatever, to for people to understand. Because you may think, Representative Fortman, that you really want to see every detail of every possible budget, but I assure you when you get them, you won't. And I think what you want is that people always have interest in certain projects or certain departments, and that's what they want. And so I think something that our communication down assures all members that this is, points out this paragraph, whatever it ends up being, and say this is available, and please, you know, we'll pass on any request, or we'll just tell them that they should, you know, or that your request can go on. But this continual, I used to be more concerned about this than anyone else, is recycling. this continual flow of paper that nobody reads is really depressing.
But I'm sorry, I think that people are interested in very detailed budget information for the committees on which they serve. Like, for example, I'm not interested in receiving this information with regard to the Department of Agriculture.
Yes.
So the trick is in figuring out a system where people who serve on the State Government Finance Committee all receive detailed information without figuring out 2 years down the road they have to ask the chair or the fiscal staff for whatever they might be looking for.
Okay, I think Mr. Marks has something
to say. Madam Chair and Representative Portman and other members, just a comment on the budget book itself. We have House Senate fiscal staff meet with the Department of Finance this sometime in the summer. It'll come up July, August, September again of this year. And part of that discussion is what should be in the budget book. And we have this tension between too much information and not enough information. And And we've tried to work that out over the years. There is a almost endless amount of information available. And the question becomes, what's going to be in the budget books? What are committees going to use? How much is helpful and how much is too much? At what point do we tend to get buried in the information? And the budget books you currently have are a result of those discussions. There can be quite a bit more information added to it. Of course, it adds more pages, adds more detail, and a lot more numbers. We've gotten to the point now where there also have been some definitions in, or some changes in statutes the last few years, actually maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that have redefined what a base level appropriation is and some of that, which has driven some of the changes in the budget book. But there's a, from the budget book perspective, there's a great amount of detail available, and as the chair has stated, we could bury you in that information, and we don't want to do that either, and that becomes the problem of what's useful versus what's too much. And I think there's an openness to trying to make those budget books more worthwhile, because there's always a sense that they're not worth putting together if they don't get used. And whether you want to specify that in statute or not is also a question here. But I don't think there's an unwillingness to provide the information, the budget book type information, the history type information, and so on. I think there's a concern about how to make it useful, how to make it readable for most legislators, and have the backup available to provide the detail to those who want more. So.
Okay.
Notice that last little caveat. Well, been a long time.
Well, let me try and see if some of I guess the language to meet Representative Pepin's concerns, it should go to, in the House, the person is called the Republican lead, and in the Senate it's called the ranking minority member. So we'll add at least, now I don't know what happens if we change the, if that changes, but let's assume.
I think, Madam Chair, you could just say minority lead.
Oh, yes. Very good. That's right. That's totally appropriate. Probably good for the next few years, but you're right. So let's do ranking minority member and minority lead. And then the I got some language, and to any other... and to any other legislative, and to any other legislator on request. I don't know why we wouldn't want to hold it to the committee members. So I think, and then I think the chairs would tell people, you can make a standing request for everything at the beginning, or you can make a request for just particular departments you may be interested in, and you can make a request for nothing.
Madam Chair, also, within the law, there's all kinds of times that reports are given to the Chair of Ways and Means. And I get a report, and I look on it, and it goes to the fiscal analyst and other members that are listed on that, the ranking members many times, or the chair of that particular division. Yes. And to talk to the fiscal analyst, they say, is this available to share? I mean, when I look at who else is copied on it automatically, I then don't go around and say, I got this big report, would you like to have it? I just got one about that, taking federal funds. Another is a little amendment to it today. I looked at who the copy is. I went to the copy of the fiscal terms. I didn't even go there anymore, because they're the ones that are dealing with it in the fiscal analyst. But it's available to anybody. And generally speaking, if you go to the fiscal analyst on anything, they will find it for you.
Madam Chair, if I may, Madam Chair, members, if I could comment on two things. One, I would certainly echo Mr. Mark's comments about the shared responsibility for the budget materials that you receive. That is something we take very seriously and find to be very important. I mean, I think we, given the level of effort that agency staff and our staff put into the development of that material, we want it to be useful, we want it to be used. I would remind members of a process change that we made probably 6 to 8 years ago, which was Representative Conner from Solberg, when you first started, you likely received what in my mind is in some ways the Encyclopedia of State Government, the detailed discussion of every program and every agency's activities, the volume of narrative discussion of what goes on in that agency, that material used to always be delivered in conjunction with the governor's budget recommendations. We have deliberately moved that part of the process up to disaggregate it from the governor's budget recommendations, and you will have that information this fall for the 2010 and 11 biennial budget. State agencies will produce that material, and we will post and provide that information agency by agency, program by program, the way you received the 3,000 pages last year. You'll have that background information, that narrative discussion of activities and performance information and agency objectives in the fall. Then later in the fall, after the November forecast, you'll have fiscal base and history information that supports it. And then finally in January, you'll have the governor's policy and budget proposals. And to try to keep separate that each of those are important pieces of information, each serves a distinct role in the process, and that it need not all land with a thud in January. And we've tried to recognize that and change the process as a result. The second thing I would just comment on with regard to Section 5 and who has access to this information is to remind members that we don't currently have, and I have little expectation for us to adequately obtain what is asked for in this section. This asks for us to have and make available copies of essentially all iterations and all discussions within an agency, and that information finance doesn't have currently, the governor's office doesn't have currently. If an agency at a division or even at a senior management level considers options and weighs proposals, this asks for us to have it and provide it and keep it and makes us responsible for all that information. That is, if you think about the voluminous quantities we're talking about already, this takes that another step further and asks us to adequately obtain, manage, and provide that information, and I just don't feel that that's a likely outcome that is going to satisfactorily meet what I'm hearing as the objective is what are the policy ideas that you're not hearing, and I don't think this is going to adequately answer that question.
Madam Chair, with the proposed amendment adopted.
So we don't have it yet.
Madam Chair and members, I do have this written down, okay, but not very legible yet.
Okay.
But it would be on page 4, line 7, after chair, insert, and ranking minority member. Page 4, line 8, after chair, insert, and minority lead. And then page 4, line 8, before the period, insert, comma, and to any other legislator upon request.
Okay. I heard that.
Sure.
Amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay.
Madam Chair, as you just discussed this, obviously there's a couple of ones on this. And so if it's your desire to hang on to this, I will be comfortable with that at this particular time.
There's a lot of problems. Mainly, we don't actually have the bills before us, that they're in finance, and we haven't gotten our letter of transmission. I'm comfortable working and adopting amendments, and then at some point we'll adopt the whole thing with the amendments when the bill is officially before us. I just don't want to I just want to make sure that we've said everything we want to say about the budget process, you know, before we pass it out of this division. I think of that whole finance committee. I'm not sure I want to have this kind of discussion in the whole finance committee. Representative Zeller.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And,
for the ways and means.
Either or. Just one technical, and I think Mr. Shepherd was looking at it as well. There, on page 6, there was also another place where there's a reporting section on 6.1 with the same language. I don't know that the deficiency request information has the same relevance as that on page 4, but pretty sure, you know, do it for one, do it for all kind of thing. My question and kind of my...
Jeremy, I just respond to that.
Oh, sure.
I think that one, it doesn't matter one way or another if you add it or not, it's going to be shared because that has come forward in a bill right away. Everyone
okay
in legislature will hear about it.
Yeah. No, that's fine. That wasn't my question. Madam Chair, I have a lot of the same concerns that you do about having some sort of separation. I don't know if it's necessarily secrecy or executive privilege, but a separation.
Yeah.
We were in shutdown mode a few years ago. There's a few of us that took exception with the governor and a judge and a couple of staffers in a room deciding how funds should be appropriated.
Secret meetings? Were those not open to the public?
I don't know. They were probably open, but there's 201 of us. I think we should all be the ones, working in conjunction with the executive branch. So, and if, you know, if it's going to be good for us, I could see maybe somewhere down the line the, maybe the chair of the bonding committee, at some point has to make public the decision to fund a certain set percentage of projects outstate, rural. How that came about, the ranking system is pretty easy from an agency standpoint from us, but at some point the chair and each member of those committees make some discerning decisions. And as far as the information part, I agree with Representative Solberg about the part that's kind of confusing to me is we've mixed information along with budget stuff. And just earlier this week in one of our other finance committees, we had a request from one of the majority party members to get an idea of how did the governor come to these recommendations, what's the menu, the list you gave him. And it didn't seem necessarily then as a informative discussion on information. It was, we want to see which one of your, which one of your recommendations was first or which the agency gave you so we can figure out which one you, liked or disliked the most. And so it wasn't necessarily communication, it was gotcha budgeting or gotcha politics on budgeting. And from an agency standpoint, if in the same sense you want to have folks in the lower level thinking up, if one of the recommendations is an unpopular cut to a budget and they make that recommendation, it makes sense to the agency, it makes sense for duplication purposes. If it's a sensitive area, that staff or that, someone down here will take a lot of heat because someone up here says, well, you can never say that. So there's a lot of issues here that I think it's kind of anti-creative thinking. If we're going to have some of these conversations, napkin conversations, be part of the full disclosure back and forth. So I like the idea and the concept. It's just getting around some of the details. It's kind of hard for me, Madam Chair. I share a lot of your frustration or confusion.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair and Representative Zellers, I think that maybe your last example might be something that's a problem. But also within that agency, I bet you there are people down there that have good ideas that never get percolated up.
Yep.
And, we lose some of that efficiency within state government or big corporations. I work for a big corporation and, you shut up and get along. Don't upset the apple cart. I don't care if it was a good idea. But if you look at the innovation in our society, there's been good ideas that have been promoted. And we can't, I don't think, try to stifle that either. And I know there's a balancing act here. We'll try to have that discussion and have that balancing act. I never want to play in the budget process as a gotcha type of politics. I can do that some other place. With other amendments, so
that's what ways and means is for, right?
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, or the mean ways or something. But I do think that we need to have good dialogue and good information, and not be afraid of it.
Yeah. I share the sentiment, Madam Chair. It's just the sausage making that always gets in the way, and how we get to that point is, I guess that's why we gave the gavel to you, right, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, because of the difficulties of that, if you'd like to just lay this one over and then have a discussion.
Okay,
on
I think we want to lay this one over. We all, the thought is that we may, when we're looking at these set of bills, we may want to do one budget reform bill, if we can possibly get that to it. If there are certain ones, and I know Representative Loeffler is here, and then Representative Bund, we can call on. They're a little bit different, and then we need to get to Representative Portman's bill. And we have the other Goldberg bill.
Well, Madam Chair, if you could at least bring that one before you as well, 3587.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move the bill if we have it.
Representative Portman moves 3587.
Madam Chair, I think there's at least one amendment that has to be there for clarification. I think it's line 1.12. After the word commission, You need the or committee. Committees.
1.1.
So it becomes consistent all the way through.
Okay. Okay, Representative Portman moves that amendment. Representative Portman moves the bill. And now Representative Portman moves that amendment.
Another question.
Okay, repeat. The amendment is on page, is on line 1.12. It's commission or committees after commission. Add the words or committees after commission.
Did we get it in the right spot?
Yes. The language that Mr. Solberg wants in the bill is on 1.10, and he wants to get the same language on 1.12. Okay, do you want to speak to this?
Madam Chair, I'm going to discuss Mr. Mark. So, do you want to adopt that amendment?
Okay, I thought we did. All those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, this was kind of brought to me as in discussing some of the issues that we've been talking about on the table with Mr. Marks, and I'm going to just let him kind of do a little bit of how this came about.
Okay, Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair, members, this was actually kind of an evolution of the discussion that you just previously had about getting information from the governor's budget process, and in some of the discussions that I have been involved with, we were talking about the budget process in the executive branch has changed over the years from what you had described earlier, and there's not so much a point anymore where the agency puts together all its requests and those are transmitted to the governor's office. It's much more of a dynamic process over time. And then the discussion went on to, well, how do other states get this kind of information? And, well, one example is that some states, the legislature actually adopts its own budget or puts together its own budget recommendations. And, for example, Texas or Arkansas would be a couple examples of states where a legislative committee meets sometime in the fall preceding the legislative session and adopts budget recommendations. And the governor may also be doing that, and there may actually be competing budget recommendations before the legislature. So then the question is, well, what kind of information would the legislature need to do that? And that's what basically is in this bill. This section would go under the language under the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy and would anticipate that this joint commission could develop budget recommendations that it would present to the legislature. And then this says that agencies have to provide the kind of information to the commission that would be needed. The language in the amendment you discussed also would provide for if the commission didn't do it, that a committee in the House or Senate or both could do it as well. But the commission or the committees then would have to ask agencies for information, perhaps asking, what are your good ideas and how can we put this together? And then this legislative committee or commission could develop budget recommendations that could be presented to the legislature. So a little bit different perspective on it than what's in the other bill, but that's the thought here that this would set up a process for getting information if there was a desire to do that kind of budget or those budget recommendations.
Okay. The Department of Finance think about this idea.
Madam Chair, members, I think this is certainly more consistent with current practice, where we have generally and consistently taken the view that the materials that agencies develop and submit through the executive branch budget development process are non-public data. We, however, have from the Department of Finance's standpoint, never tried to stifle agencies' ability to answer direct questions about how they would alter their budget, how they would, if an agency had 10% more, how would they spend it, how would they prioritize it. I think that's the type of dialogue that is important in legislative deliberations and appropriations discussions, but I think it's certainly more consistent with where our practice has been and our view of the materials that we receive. And this is, we did have some informal staff discussions around some of these before these bills were jacketed, and this is closer to some of the concepts we talked about. I think we would prefer that it maybe go in a little bit different direction around orienting some of this more focused options of development around an agreed-upon set of goals or performance measures, or that the LCPFP, the Legislative Commission on Finance and Fiscal Policy, might identify recently adopted budget proposals, and that with an almost Legislative Audit Commission type identification of issues and topics, that focus effort might look at topics that way as opposed to a full budget recommendation. But that's, as I said, more consistent with where we're at now.
So, Madam Chair, and again, kind of getting back to the discussion of has there been a problem in the past? You know, Mr. Gustafson, you just said in the past you haven't stifled the agency's ability to disclose information, numbers, goals, incentives. Besides the fact that this is kind of like three quarter time legislature, because in the budget year we'd be meeting, or at least some of the members of the legislature would be meeting more frequent and earlier in the season. I'm just curious, are we addressing a problem, or are we getting at a kind of what if?
Madam Chair, Representative Dellers, I don't know that this is a problem. I think there's a lot of uncertainty in how the legislature with this authority would move forward. As Mr. Marks notes, in some years the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy has not been particularly active. Would this result in that group being active and producing a full-fledged budget recommendation? I think the other reaction I have is whether, when you think about the governor's budget and the full executive branch budget proposal, that includes really visible, really big dollar amount policy proposals, but it also includes small items, small funds, less visible things that never make the headlines. And to us, that is the full-fledged budget recommendation from the governor. And whether or not this would result in a competing full, all funds, all agencies, all item type of recommendation, which is why it seems that a more an alternative would be to focus on what are some areas of interest, where might you want a discussion with agency staff around options and strategies for addressing issues, as opposed to a full-fledged budget package.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a question actually from Mr. Shepherd. I'm just wondering about reducing the number of words in this bill. And so I'll just suggest that on line 1.11, if you could, between the words provide and information, insert requested, and after information, put the period, and eliminate to the committee or committees as requested by the commission or committees to develop those recommendations. It seems like it's a circular thing otherwise, and it's probably a minimal.
Sure.
It's just, I think, a little bit more concise.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I would move such amendment. Here's the amendment. Do you have that one?
Madam Chair, Representative Puffin, just to make sure that I've got this correct, on page 1, line 11, before information, it would insert the word requested, and then put a period after information and delete to the commission, or, and then delete everything through the period on line 12.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just the word. Well, probably not the word that.
Right, correct.
So the sentence would then read, if the commission or committee proceeds with the development of budget recommendations, state agencies must provide requested information. And it's all right. Let's assume that it's requested information from them. Okay. All right. All those in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
It's always fun to come to this committee and get paid.
Okay. Now, Representative Tolbert, I understand this bill is actually not related to the whole budget process, and I think this bill is actually officially before us, and you would like this one passed on alone, is that correct?
Madam Chair, I would at this particular time, yeah. I understand that we maybe need more discussion, I think it's ready for prime time for the next committee.
Okay. Representative Tolbert?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Tolbert. I apologize if I missed this question because I was out of the room for a little bit, but I guess my confusion here is who would the state agency staff be working for? It seems to me that this would put agency staffers in a position where they had two masters, and my concern would be as a state agency staff person, I think I would be pretty torn in these two directions, and I'm wondering if it even violates union contracts, because I just don't, you know, it seems to me that they have plenty to do, and this seems like it adds another layer of things that would be required of them, and I just don't know how an agency staffer could serve both the administrative and the legislative branch. I'm not really sure in practicality how that would work, and I don't, maybe Mr. Gustafson could comment on that thought, too.
Madam Chair and Representative Pepin, I don't see that that's a two masters. I think what they're asking for is information that's available for them, and request that if they request information, they will provide it. I suppose you could have their boss say, "Don't you dare to provide it," and I think at that particular time, everyone's got a boss, and I think then the legislature would deal with the boss and not the staff person. But I don't view that as having two masters.
Madam Chair, Representative Cotton, I think it would vary pretty significantly agency to agency, the environment of the agency, the relationships among agency staff and legislators and legislative staff. I certainly can't speak to its relation to union contracts, but I think in some agencies it's likely not a significant issue. Some agencies have a fair amount of capacity directed toward legislative relations, toward interacting with the legislature at a division level, but other agencies that's not the case. I think you're going to get pretty wide variations on that topic.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Goldberg. Just in relation to your comment about it not, you know, perhaps being that big of a deal, it does say in here that one of the things they would do on 1.14 would make recommendations from agency staff for changes in the base level appropriation to improve agency operations and efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe I'm wrong, but that seems pretty heady to me to have the state agency staff do that for the legislature. So I don't know if I agree with your characterization that this really wouldn't be that big of a deal. I think this is a pretty significant change.
Well, Madam Speaker, let me clarify myself. I think it is a significant change in being able to obtain the information. I take deal as I the problem of two bosses, because I don't view this as someone having to serve two masters. I stated before, if my staff agency boss that don't provide the information, then the legislature will deal with the boss and not the staff agency. I mean, that's where I don't think there's a conflict there.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg, I just have a question about, it kind of follows up on Representative Pepin's questions, I think. What would be
if you requested the same information that the governor received, what would that do? What, in essence, would that do if the information provided to the governor was the same that was provided to the legislature?
Maybe Mr. Marks.
Mr. Marks?
Madam Chair, Representative Poppe, I think that's one of the key issues that this is attempting to address. This would be information the legislature needs to develop the budget. I don't think the question should be, what are you submitting to the governor? Or what are you recommending to the governor? The question, and that would have to be, the commission would have to put together its framework for this, but it would, the question that goes to the agency, or the questions that go to the agency would, might be, what would you recommend to us to improve this program, or to change this program? You know, or the question could be, if you had 10% more in your budget, what are the sort of things you would recommend? If the question was, what are you recommending to the governor, I would expect the answer would be, we're not going to tell you that. And that's the sort of response that I think is frustrating some people right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the language, as is stated here, is as clear as possible that that's different than from what
no.
that is?
Madam Chair and Representative Poppe, I think that's what the attempt is. Here it is, that the commission is going to have to ask the question. This doesn't say what the question should be. That's something that's going to have to be developed if the commission chooses to go this route. Presumably, at the time those questions are getting asked, that discussion would take place.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Solberg, we rely heavily on the fiscal analyst staff here. Bill Marks as the director. Are you proposing, based on this, then, that we would get rid of that department altogether? Or?
No, I think
we're
proposing.
And it's certainly not what I'm proposing.
I think we're proposing they get a lot more work to do.
They get more work, I think. not necessarily more work, but
different.
I mean, they would still be the number pressures and so forth as we go through that.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I guess what I'm confused by is, they have a lot of institutional knowledge that they offer to us. We've been very fortunate that many of them have been here for years. And so I'm just curious as to what information you're not able to get to them that you feel the need to go through the state agency.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, I think I'll go back to my first premise. And that is, when we ask the questions on certain questions that are asked, probably the top brass of the agencies will answer that question, or their fifth analysts or their people. So I think I'm a little bit frustrated sometimes on, if you don't ask the right questions, specifically the right question, you don't get the information you're looking for. But I think this is an attempt to say, as Mr. Marks has said, what ideas are in that agency that never get passed up? If we were able to ask an agency, what would you do if we had to cut 50% of it? What would you do? I introduced some legislation one time to do away with an agency, to abolish it, transfer its duties. You'd be surprised the information I found out. I was also accused of all kinds of other things in that process, such as being a racist and everything else. But I found out all kinds of information. And I don't think you need to do that. You shouldn't have to be to go to that extreme to find out information, or take that. I was actually literally called a racist because of the legislation, and I don't think any legislator needs to have that done to them as well. So I think that we're attempting to do to say let's open up that dialogue, let's have some. Don't be afraid to talk to the legislative committee. What ideas are down there? You know, how can you function better? Every one of us on both sides of the political aisle say, well, we just need to make government more efficient. But we never allow the people who are running the government to have the ability to say, this is how I can make it more efficient. And I think this is an attempt to do that. Whether this is the right attempt or not, I don't know. But I think it gives us the legislative commission and committee and some authority to be able to do that.
Okay. The problem that we have now is that we have four bills left and we have to get out of here at four.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to be any sense to starting any of them because I don't think any of them are easy. Representative Portman, do you want to say anything?
I think we should continue this discussion. And my bill we can certainly consider as an amendment to whatever budget reform package.
Yeah, and I apologize to Representative Bunn, who I think already left, and Representative Lawford and Representative Winkler. We need to. We'll need to. We did get in here a little late because we were being nice to the previous committee. So, okay, so we'll continue this discussion on. Oh, I'm sorry. Right. See, this is a bill that we do want to pass that. So.
Sure, I would like to at least have this thing go forward, I think.
So, Representative Portman has moved that this bill be, as amended, be referred to the committee, would be passed on to the Committee of Finance, whatever we call it. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion passed. Okay. Okay.
Chair, and members,
now,
I think it was a long and good dialogue. I'm sorry I took up all your committee time.
Okay, meeting adjourned. We'll get back to this on Tuesday. All right.